Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we are trudging forward and doing this. It's toy department time. I don't know why I said trudging forward. Like, yeah. It's a fine day to talk pop culture, if not exist in the world.
You're not the one living in a weird post-apocalyptic wasteland, so I don't know what your problem is.
My problem is that it was 45 when I stepped outside today, that we went straight from summer just right into late fall.
Well, did you see Denver?
I did see Denver, yeah.
My God. And
it was somewhat similar to me because I was in L.A. last weekend where it was 100.
Yep. Nasty.
So I went from 100 to like 45. They went from like 90 to snow or something like that. Is that right?
They went from like humid 90s to a snowstorm. And then by the end of this week, it's supposed to be back up to the high 80s.
Wow.
Like, climate change, folks. It's a thing.
It's real.
Yep.
It's real and we're seeing it.
Yep.
The skies in San Francisco, though. I didn't want to minimize that because, you know, if you know anyone who lives in that area on Instagram.
And Oregon as well. All of Oregon.
Yeah. It's, it is creepy. It looks like the kind of thing that you would see in, one of those, like, 80s post-apocalyptic, after the nuclear war.
It's
movies.
Total Recall, Sky.
Yeah, there you go. It's Total Recall. Except it's real and it's happening.
Yes. This is where I out you for not doing something you were supposed to do this week, which, of course, is to watch the film I'm thinking of ending things on Netflix, which is a Charlie Kaufman creation, written and directed.
I was really excited to watch this movie.
Yes, so hold on.
I suggested this movie.
Yes, sorry, this was all you. We're going to watch it for next week, or you're going to watch it for next week to catch up to your partner who watched it. But the reason I bring it up at this juncture is because this is the best way I can explain what my day was like yesterday. On Tuesday night, late at night, after my wife had gone to bed and I had finished watching playoff basketball and some baseball, I was like, I think I'm going to give this movie a spin. And I'm not going to tell you anything about the movie that you don't know already when I say this movie is so weird that I couldn't shake the feeling yesterday that I had somehow, via this movie, been transported to an alternate universe.
All right.
Like, I watched one of the weirdest films I have ever seen in my entire life, passed out, and woke up with an orange sky. It was incredibly disturbing. I don't know how else to describe it than incredibly disturbing.
The movie was incredibly disturbing, or the experience of watching the movie and then waking up to an orange sky?
The overall experience. The movie itself was less disturbing than just so bizarre. And so, okay. I mean, it is by its nature, I don't want to say too much, but it is by its nature somewhat opaque, or at least resistant to any kind of easy explanation or definition of just what in the hell was going on or what it all meant, right? Which I think, again, is a thing you would expect from Charlie Kaufman. But I will say, this movie is much more off the wall. In terms of, like, narrative consistency, this movie is far more bizarre than John Malkovich or Adaptation. Far more.
Okay. Well, Kaufman also did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And
yeah, much stranger than that.
Yeah. But I do feel like watching this movie was just erased from my memory. Just like what it's like. Yeah, Jim Carrey.
Maybe that's what happened. You watched it and then you had to go see a guy or a girl to wipe your memory.
Because I was into it. And I, you know, ordinarily Monday comes around, I start doing the, well, what haven't I watched yet for the
right,
show?
Right. And it just and didn't.
Somehow I just missed this one. So
weird. Anyway, it's interesting, man. I can't wait to talk about it.
Okay. Well, if I can segue into stuff that we did watch,
yes,
I
please.
Do feel like narrative that is sort of hard to explain and maybe even the movie has trouble comprehending is a description that could apply to Bill and Ted's Face the Music. What do you think?
Yeah, a bit.
How would you explain this movie to someone who had never heard of Bill and Ted?
Right. I'd tell them to watch the first two.
Okay.
I thought that was the most interesting thing about this movie, is that rather than a film that might stand on its own for a group of people who had never heard of Bill and Ted before, which is a lot of
people
in today's world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, not most. Because that, I mean, that movie was really, those movies were huge, you know?
Yeah, but it's been, what, 30 years? It was last, when
almost
when
40.
Last Bill and Ted came
35
yeah.
since the first one, probably. So it was, the whole thing was kind of an inside joke for Bill and Ted fans. Or many inside jokes, perhaps.
A lot of winky references.
Yes,
sure.
It really leaned very heavily on the first two, and my wife and I had just watched the first two last week in preparation because, you know, for something like this, I got to refresh the memory or I would have been totally lost. And having just seen the first two, this was a pleasurable, you know, trequel, whatever it's called. I enjoyed it. It wasn't great. It wasn't special in any way, but it was fun. And other than Keanu's sort of weird face, it was totally enjoyable.
His face is weird.
I don't know what's
it's
up
weird,
with that.
Right?
Because his face doesn't look weird in, like, John Wick. So maybe it's just, like, his old face in comparison to his young face or something.
Maybe.
But
maybe
he does.
He's got a lot of Botox in the last couple of years.
It could be that. It could be that. But I always wonder with that, because if that's what it is, like, bad job, Botox. Right?
I think the Botox works really great to a point. And then, like, falls off a cliff, stops working. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that. Well, and who knows? Look, I don't want to speculate on Keanu Reeves' personal decisions. I don't really care. He just did look a little weird.
Yeah.
But I thought they were funny.
The face stops moving.
Yeah. I thought they were funny. I thought it was reasonably well written. And, like, yeah, the whole premise is absurd, but the premise was always absurd.
Yeah. And I, you know, maybe it's watching this and watching Umbrella Academy sort of at the same time, like that. I've spent too much time.
Your time traveled out
about the, yeah, the practical implications of time travel.
Well, I mean, except that the Umbrella Academy, in its own goofy way, tries to play on the actual concept, and Bill and Ted's is just silly. You know,
yes.
They don't really consider the realities of time travel that much.
No, but they do consider the implications, I feel like, right? You know, stuff happens and then that makes something else in the story happen and then they have to go somewhere else and right.
Right.
And,
to,
I mean,
to a
most
certain
of the movie,
degree.
I don't think I'm mild spoiler, I guess, is really spent with them, you know, calibrating if they've gone to the right moment in time, right?
Of course. But my point is, like, they don't go too deep on considering the implications. They're following a pretty straight line that is the plot of the movie. And there's time travel, so there's time travel implications, but it's not like, what would this actually look like in any way? There's no element of that to Bill and Ted.
No. I mean, look, I do think that they're, you know, like, it's not a terrible movie. And I mean, I think it's interesting that there, you know, some meditations about middle age.
Yes.
And family and things like that. But I don't know. Like, I didn't feel like either of the daughter, Bill and Ted's, particularly worked. So
I, the daughters were doing like a little too big an impression of the original characters in a way that just didn't totally make sense.
Yeah.
I think I would agree with that. It would have been better if the daughters had played it a little straighter, just so that they were, you know, that they loved and admired their dads, but that they weren't doing impressions of them. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like they should have been more different, I feel like.
Right, because they still ultimately, that was like an 80s version of a specific person that isn't a thing anymore. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, these are lightweight criticisms of a lightweight movie as far as I'm concerned.
It's yeah,
not
correct.
A bad way to spend your time on a Saturday evening. We watch this outside on a projector.
Okay, well, there you go. Here's the way I would put it. I'm not sure it was worth spending $20 on to watch on my couch.
Fair enough. But if you had been with like 10 people and you'd each thrown in $2, you'd have been happy.
Yeah, or if I had stumbled into this on cable in a year,
right.
I would have been fine with it. You
right.
know what I mean?
Totally.
But, you know. I wouldn't say it would have been worth the effort to see in a theater.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, that may be true. That may be true.
I mean, and that's, you know, with not thinking of the theater as a potential death trap as we must in 2020. So
yeah, we have canceled our AMC Stubbs subscription. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, good for you. And you know, like, I feel like we can just say now we're not going to be covering Tenet on this show.
No. We're not going to see Tenet
anytime soon. Yeah, it's just not.
As soon as they put it out as soon as I can get it on Amazon Prime, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love your movies, and I'm looking forward to the day I come back. But
I'm not
rushing it.
No, I'm excited to see The New Mutants. And again, I'll see it just as soon as it's available on my home television.
Yep. Sorry. Not risking the old life for popcorn.
Seriously.
So, yeah. I don't know that much more needs to be said about Bill and Ted. I feel like it's...
Nah, I think we got it covered.
That is what it is. You will not think about this movie, though.
Ever again?
You know, ever again.
Probably,
and
probably right.
I think that's probably... I would say that they're not reaching too far.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not... I don't know if that was ever really the goal, so...
Correct. And here's another thing I'd say about it. If someday my son grows up and wants to watch a Bill and Ted movie, it'll be the first one. So that's how we'll do that.
Yeah, correct.
And I'll explain to him.
Would be my guess.
Yeah, and I'll explain to him why he shouldn't say some of the things that they say in the first one, but fair enough.
So part of me as I watched this, because I did not go back and watch the first two, though you did suggest it. part of me regretted it a little bit, because I'm like, man, I feel like there'd be a little bit more of this that's coming home to me in this experience. But I also don't know that doing 4 hours of homework, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or 3 hours
may
of
not
homework,
have been worth it.
Probably not have been worth
although
it.
I will say those first two are pretty enjoyable. And in particular, I think the biggest value add to the new one is the character of Death. Is really a great character.
Yes, agreed.
And like remembering how hilarious he was in the first in the Bogus Journey helped for sure.
William Sadler, yeah. Yeah, who I think added an EP role on this movie, which probably has something to do with why they gave him a lot to do.
I think that's how they got him too.
Yep, when I saw that in the credits, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that all makes sense. All right, since you're living life on Mars, you want to talk about Away?
Yes, I'm fascinated to talk about this.
Okay,
do you have
how many episodes did you watch?
I think I've seen four.
Oh, okay, so I'm like two and change. I think I got about halfway through the third one.
Oh. Well, let me ask you something. Spoiler alert for people who have not watched it. Have you learned anything about Dr. Liu?
I have, yes.
Okay. So here I think – let me try to tell you where I'm at on this show. From the moment I started it, I wanted to hate it. Because this is this show is a Trojan horse. It is not a Mars show. It is not a space show. It's a Lifetime drama. Space and Mars are the setting and the context for an interpersonal, emotional, dramatic television show. And that pisses me off on a core level. And yet I have to admit that this show is so well designed and well acted, and I think pretty well written, that I am incredibly emotionally invested in the characters. I care about what's happening. I find it emotionally affecting, and I have to admit, this show is good. Like, I don't totally know if it's for me, even after four episodes, but I'm probably going to finish it because I think they really have, mostly because of the acting, but again, I think it's pretty well written. I think they really have created emotional stakes that I care about, even though I'm annoyed by what the show is at its core.
Mm. Yeah, see, for me, and maybe it's because I'm a little further behind, my framing was a little bit more like it's a space show and it's a Hilary Swank family drama.
Yeah, but it really expands.
Okay, good. Because I find the space parts to be much more interesting than the story. Although I love Josh Charles, one of the reasons I was excited to watch the show. I have not found Hilary Swank's life on Earth to be particularly compelling. And there's a lot of time spent in there in the first few episodes. So
yes, the first two in particular. But episode three starts to get more into the backstory of Wang Lu and I believe the Russian guy.
Russian guy's in earlier ones.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Talking about his like family and
right.
You know what's going on with his daughter and.
Yep. So there's a lot of Wang Lu in episode three. Episode four gets more into the Indian guy, Ram, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
And just like the interpersonal drama of the crew starts to become more of a thing. I expect episode five will probably get into the British guy. Like they're painting all the characters thoroughly. And yes, the family drama is still part of it, but I just think the show sort of is expanding its emotional reach over the course of each new episode. So, you know, again, like,
And I think that stuff's good.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, you cut out. So I thought you paused.
Oh no. Yeah. I did briefly, but I guess I would recommend this to people who would like to watch an emotional drama. Because I do think it's a good emotional drama in its own way. It's just really, like, yeah, there are things that happen in space that are space things, but, like, they might as well just be someone having a stroke or a heart attack on Earth, right? Like, it's just, like, there are challenges to all of the characters, but it's really just about how it all affects them emotionally. Because ultimately, this show is much more about the character's interior life.
Like, there's a scene, and I think it's a really great scene, and it probably cost a gajillion dollars,
yep,
where they have to spacewalk to fix one of the parts on
solar panel.
On this ship.
Yeah.
Solar panel, yeah. It's the kind of scene that you've seen in plenty of space movies before, right?
Yep.
Something's broke and someone has to go out there and, you know, MacGyver it together. But that scene, which is super tense and plays out and long and plays out – it really, even that scene is really about the what's happening emotionally between,
yep,
the two astronauts who are attempting the spacewalk.
Exactly. I mean, that yeah, scene is sort of the perfect microcosm of the show because it, you're right, it clearly cost a fortune. And this show, I mean, they are in zero G. Like, there's no way they can fake some of this stuff. So, like, they clearly spent a fortune on the set. Because they're in a fake spaceship floating around. Like, I can't imagine that's not real. Or if it's not real, I'm sure it also cost a fortune to make it look that real. So,
yep,
it seems like every shot costs a fortune, but none of them are really about the special effects, as elaborate and good as those are.
Yeah, it's almost like they're window dressing to get people to watch this.
Yeah. Which maybe
in a personal drama.
You know what? Maybe that's not the worst idea. I mean, again, yeah. like that's sort of how they got me, and they kind of got me. So maybe it's a good strategy, but it is it's a little weird. Because when it was like Hilary Swank's space show Mission to Mars, I was like, all right, space time. And while we are in space, it seems almost irrelevant. Like they could just be. In fact, there's a scene in the episode I just watched where the daughter is like starting to make friends with this dude at school whose dad was in the military. And, you know, that this could just be people in a different country with the military just as easily, you know? The important thing is like...
Or Hilary Swank could be at sea instead
exactly.
of Mars, you know what I mean?
The only like, important thing is that, like, they're not home, these people. They're away from their families and loved ones, and they're in a dangerous situation. And other than that, it really doesn't matter what those situations are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That said, I'm going to continue watching this. Like, I think it's... has been pretty compelling.
I mean, Hilary Swank is also very good. Like, I think we should probably just say that. She's played a lot of different, diverse sort of roles. And, like, it's almost a little weird to see her as, like, well, you know, she's an astronaut. So, like, this is a special person. But, again, you don't think about it that much. She more just feels like someone's mom.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, she plays it so well. She's really good. She's really, really good.
She is really good. Can I register my one Hilary Swank complaint?
Of course.
In this, so there's this recurring phrase between her and her husband where they're like, "I love you, shithead."
No, it's worse than that because she's the only one who says it, and she sounds very unnatural.
Yeah, like it just it's like they don't pull that one off at all.
No, nope.
She's such a good actress, and like it's a recurring phrase.
Yeah,
so like it comes
she says
up more
it repeatedly. Yeah,
and she blows it every time, and I'm like, I just like what was the choice that was made?
And you know what's interesting about that? One. I actually think she's what's so weird to me. I noticed the exact same thing, and what's weird to me about it is that. I don't think the problem is Hilary Swank can't pull it off. I think the problem is the character can't pull it off. Like,
it's very incongruent for her character.
Exactly. Nothing else about that character makes you think she'd say shithead like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, they should have had a different cute catchphrase, but, you know, whoever wrote that was obviously very proud of it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And maybe that's why. She's playing it so weirdly because she's like, my character wouldn't say this.
Maybe, but, yeah. Because that's what it feels like. It's like, really? Her?
Yeah.
It's
a very weird note.
But it's a weird note. That's all it is.
But that said, I completely agree. outside of that, she's it's a banger performance from her. And she's got a lot to do. So
she does. She really does.
it's important that she nailed it. So,
well, and that's one of the most interesting and best parts of the sort of dramatic side and themes of this show, I think, is like her trying to balance both her time and her personality between trying to be the commander of a international space mission and the mother of a teenager, which like requires very different people essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. You want to move on to The Boys?
I do. Did you watch all three?
I don't. I watched two.
Okay.
I don't feel like I have a lot to say about The Boys. Like, I really like season one. I'm still on board with season two. I think Aya Cash is a tremendous addition.
Tremendous.
You know, I mean, anytime you've got oh my god, I'm totally blanking on his name. Do not get old. but my man from Breaking Bad.
From Breaking Bad?
Yeah, Gus Fring.
Oh, yeah. Well, now I can't remember his name.
It's Giovanni, right? Giovanni. Oh man, it's terrible.
No, I don't think it's Giovanni.
But anyway, Gus Fring's in it.
Giovanni. Now I'm confused.
Isn't that his name? What's his name?
I'm gonna look it up because you're
okay.
You confused me.
Anyway, Gus Fring from Breaking Bad.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Giancarlo. There we go. Thank you. Is tremendous.
Excellent. A great addition to the cast. Aya Cash, a great addition to the cast. Let me just say, if what you're about to say, I mean, some stuff happens in episode 3 that I think gives you a better idea of what we're doing here this season.
Gotcha. I just feel like through 2, it's just kind of zipping along. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, so a lot of stuff happening, stuff blows up.
Yeah, you know. This is a little weird, and I don't know if they meant
Homelander's a total dick.
Still
know,
a total
stuff
dick.
That you gave
yeah, still a yeah. fucking nut. No, but I think it's also, as they say in all the promotional materials, like, it's even more gory and insanely, like, over the top violent, right? Like that.
Yes.
They turned the notch up from 11 to like 13.
Which is not why I was here in season 1, to be honest.
It's not why I was here, but I don't hate it. Like, I like that they found a way after a season that was shockingly violent to shock me again in the first couple episodes. You know what I mean? And episode 3 has another, like, massive sort of action set piece with some of the craziest gore you've ever seen in your life.
Spoiler alert here, but what happens to Jennifer Esposito is that was a...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, you don't see that coming, right?
Not at all.
Yeah. They blow your mind sometimes still on this show, which I think is cool. So
I was
anyway,
like the Quake Kid on that one.
Yes. Oh man. So I think in a weird way this was a 3-episode pilot. Because you're right, those first 2 episodes just like you're almost dropped in the moment after it ended, right? It's like a week after it ended or something, maybe, but it feels like it could just be the next episode of season 1 from the season finale.
Yes.
And then, like, the first 2 episodes are just like, it's almost just a direct continuation of the same story while they introduce you to some new characters.
Yes, that's exactly what I was saying. So I stopped at the wrong episode, clearly.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of TV. but I do think episode 3 starts to show you the turn of what season 2 is versus season 1. And look, it's a lot of the same, but you kind of understand what we're doing here this time, I think. So if that's your only concern,
I mean, nothing I saw. Yeah. Even just that, hey, it's more season 1. Like, if that's all it ever was, I would have been fine with it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. I agree.
But I wouldn't mind seeing more plot, obviously, because you know that's what makes a great that's what makes a good show a great show.
Exactly, you know? And that's I think what tells you like, okay, were they about out of ideas, or can we keep this going and keep it interesting for a little while? And my instinct is the latter. So I'm very excited to have more of this tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. What do you think of the 3 episodes at a time?
I think it's perfect
release strategy.
I love it. And maybe it's just that this is I'm the audience for this, but there are times where we watch the first 2 or 3 of something and I'm like, that's pretty good. I wouldn't mind continuing to watch that. And it's all right there for me. But then there's other things that come up. And I feel like the strategy of releasing 3 at a time is like, if I really like something, I can reasonably get through 3 in a week. And then when they drop another 3, I like notice it again. And I'm like, oh yeah. And, you know, 1 a week is fine, but it does sometimes leave me wanting. Whereas 3 a week, like, sure, there are shows that I'll watch 5 episodes in a night if I really love it. But 3 a week is a nice pace for me where, like, I'm not bound to something on a particular day. I can space it out a little bit. I have the time to get through it. But also, it's a lot. It's a lot of content on a weekly basis. So, for me, the 3 at a time thing is just about right.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like that's where everybody but Netflix is kind of settling.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that if I was Netflix, I don't think I would pivot either.
No. Other than that, you know, Netflix plays around with it seems like.
They have some shows that drop weekly, right? Because, you know, they've got the Hasan Minhaj. They've got.
You know they got canceled, by the way, right?
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But they have shows that come in week to week. They do Bake Off live, you know? So there are things on Netflix like that. But Netflix is the originator of the binge model, and I still think that's why a lot of people are there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And, you know, a lot of people do just want to wait till the whole thing drops and watch it all in one sitting.
Yeah, but to me, there is something very enjoyable about the ability to track something week to week, even if it's three episodes at a time.
Yeah. So I don't know. Does it say anything that, you know, I watched two and Change on Away, which I really enjoyed. And I watched Two and the Boys, which I really enjoyed. But I devoured all six episodes of All or Nothing, Tottenham Hotspur.
Well, it certainly shows why you ran out of time to watch I'm Thinking of Ending Things. I want to talk about this, though.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
I would not say, by the way, that I would like this the best of those shows. It's definitely the most watchable for me.
It's incredibly bingeable. But here's what I want to try to understand something. When they started doing this, right? Because All or Nothing, they had tried it in football, and I think people were like, "That's just a B movie, Hard Knocks. Why are you doing that?" Right. So this concept existed, and they decided to do it in the.
Who I have not seen the football.
I didn't watch it. It was the Eagles.
Okay.
But this was conceived well in advance, and I'm guessing that they chose Tottenham and started the process while Maurizio, what's his name?
Pochettino.
While Pochettino was still the coach and Tottenham was coming off of a Champions League run and they had a bunch of good players.
And
oh my God, are they lucky? Because if Tottenham had not tanked, and they had not ended up hiring Jose Mourinho, this would have been unwatchable. The first episode, which by the way covered like 3 months of the season,
they just were late. Yeah.
Was unwatchable. There was nothing interesting about anyone on the screen. It was truly some of the like. And by the way, I'm interested in the Premier League. This is a world that I am intrigued by and generally not very on top of. And I was excited to get into it. And everything until the moment Jose Mourinho gets on screen is worthless. Worthless. Now, I got to say.
All right, go ahead.
He's as good a reality show, a sports reality show character as you can have. I mean, he's Rex Ryan. He's Ozzie Guillen. He's it. And now that he's there, it's pretty compelling stuff. I think I watched three, so I'm not quite as far as you, but he is the very definition of a compelling sports character.
Correct. That's true of and apart from this show. Right?
Oh yeah. Like, no. And he's
always the straw that stirs the drink.
Yes. And I am a Chelsea fan you know, to the extent that I pay attention to Premier League, I'm a Chelsea guy. So I'm well aware. I know me some Jose and I love him. I love him. And I loved the stuff when they're like, you know, Jose, 5 years ago, when you were asked as the manager of Chelsea if you'd ever go to Tottenham, you said, no, I would never do that to Chelsea fans. What happened? And he's like, I got sacked.
Twice, I think.
Yeah. Like he's like, you know, it's a betrayal. I think the betrayal is I won them two Champions Leagues and they fired me. he's great. And like As happens on the episode, you know, older Hard Knock stuff where you really got to see some good coaches interacting with their players, you can immediately see why he's as well respected and successful as he is. You know, I also thought, like, here's a fascinating thing about the world of soccer. when you're an NBA coach, certainly when you're an NFL coach, the vast majority of your job is figuring out how to deploy your players. You know, like, let's just stick with the NFL. The vast majority of your job is tactical, is right. play design, is scheme design, is who to use where and when. And obviously, substitution is perpetual. In the game of soccer, that's just not the case. You know, you can design broad tactics and you have, you know, philosophies that you want to play by. Yeah,
formation and setup and that stuff matters. But
yeah, but there's very
little
tactics.
It's a lot more like baseball.
Yes.
It's really about man motivation and keeping the team in it from week to week.
Exactly
what you're doing out there, yeah.
And so like 80% of your job is calling players into your office and talking to them. You know, I mean, that's a huge part of his job is having these one-on-one conversations with players where he finds a way to motivate them and explain to them what he wants from them. And I think like you can immediately see his gift for that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that he is playing to the camera the entire
course.
Time.
Well, he's like a Phil Jackson, right?
Yeah.
We're like
very John Gruden and Hard Knocks-y, I feel like a little bit in that way. You know,
yeah,
I mean?
They're
like,
feel, it feels like 100%
aware that it's there. Yeah. Yeah. And, but which is not to say that he doesn't know what he's doing or that. You
That's
know,
why
I
said
look,
Phil
man
Jackson,
motivation
though,
is.
Right?
Yeah. Is one of the hallmarks of who Jose Mourinho is.
Yep.
You also have to like for me, you know, I'm coming to this Mourinho. You know, his arch rival as a manager was Arsenal's manager, Arsene Wenger, like
right.
longtime manager. He, you know, those two got in a shoving match, which if you know, either of them is kind of wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause those are two very non-violent individuals. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there's that. And then he's managing Tottenham, which of course is the you know, end all be all arch rival of my team. So,
oh, is that,
you know, for
me, I didn't know that. So Tottenham and Arsenal are, is it Chelsea and Man U are the bigger rivals?
Yeah. So look, so basically Arsenal, right. You know, you're watching this, you can tell, you know, Tottenham is in North London.
Yes. Well, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, West Ham, those are all London clubs, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all London clubs.
Right.
But Arsenal moved into North London in the 1870s, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And those two have hated each other ever since.
Okay, so Tottenham is even further back in North London, and Arsenal is like the interlopers.
is the 150-year interlopers. So yeah. So those two have fought over the same, you know, airspace essentially within the city of London, and that's that makes it particularly intense. And like Arsenal fans, well, we have been able to do it in a while, but there's a day called St. Totteringham's Day, where you celebrate the day that you finish over Tottenham in the league table. And there's like there's a lot of anti-Tottenham Arsenal songs and a lot of anti-Arsenal Tottenham songs. So,
I like it.
It's good times. So anyway, we hate Tottenham. So for me, there's a lot of hate watching in this. I'm like watching how thirsty Daniel Levy, the guy that runs Tottenham, is. And he's unlike Mourinho. He's playing to the cameras and he's bad at it.
He's
and
terrible.
So like. The two of them have these conversations sometimes.
Yeah. No, I mean, that guy.
So obviously planned out and scripted. It's
yes.
wild.
Levy is like just the caricature of an executive who wants a higher profile.
Yes, correct. Correct.
And look, some of the players are kind of interesting, I guess. Dele, at least, is kind of interesting. But like, not even as interesting as the prototype of that kind of player would be, you know?
Yeah. And look, as you know, look, Harry Kane is a global superstar, but as global superstars go,
he's the Michael Phelps of soccer.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Like he's not the most like doesn't leap off the screen.
No, but in when you see the moments of play, and obviously I've seen more of Harry Kane than just this show, but the guy is like a physical force. He's a right. force out there. He's wildly impressive to watch play, but yet he's like a brick wall when it comes to a TV character. And
yes.
I just, yeah, none of the really good players are that compelling.
Son has nothing to say. He's kind of, right. He's like, I mean, you know, he's that quiet, polite, you know, Korean yeah. guy kind of.
Yeah.
I think the, like they, when they really get into good, how though. Like, how, what a hero he is in that country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think some of that is kind of interesting. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's just not, it's not the most interesting group of players. And I think too, like, the main difference between the Premier League and the NFL is that in American sports, we're just used to so much more access to players.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really get to talk to players in the Premier League. Like, one of them comes to like this official TV interview area right. and gets asked about four questions after the game. And other than that, you're pretty much cut off to them. Right. So
right.
this show should be, you know, this really exciting peak, but it's a very, feels like a very sanitized.
They picked
peak
the wrong and, team.
Yeah.
They just, they
the best
the
example
team.
Of that is Christian Eriksen. And I don't know how much of that they've,
I haven't gotten to that yet.
First three.
Yeah. Now look, you know, this is a boring bunch of guys, and it yeah. sort of defies logic because on one hand it's a tremendous collection of talent, but sometimes, and maybe that's the problem, is there's so little access that they didn't realize how boring this group was. But again, if they hadn't gotten, it's really very lucky that the team farted on themselves out of the gate and had to fire like, their coach, and that like Mourinho happened yeah. to not be working. Right? Because, like, this yeah. this really would have been terrible. I mean, I can't stress enough how important he is to the TV show, and apparently also to the club.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of screen time. Well, there are two guys that ask off the team.
Wow.
You know, over the next couple of episodes. So that'll be interesting. And then we haven't seen this in the show at all yet, but I know what happens in real life, that one of these players goes into the stands because – you know, and starts a fight at some point in the season.
Yeah.
So
that should be interesting.
Hopefully that'll be, yeah, hopefully that will make for some good television. So,
and this is another thing that's what, releasing a couple episodes a week?
Three a week, yeah. So,
yeah, I so like this
you,
format.
Do you think you're going to see it through?
Yeah, probably. I probably will. And the three-a-week format helps because, like, I'll be able to catch up and then the new releases will come out and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I like that, you know? Because I do kind of like the show. It's just it needed Jose Mourinho so badly.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that Jose Mourinho is taking selfies with Tottenham employees at the Christmas party if they're not cameras, though?
Actually, yes. Because this is where I think the Gruden thing comes in. Like, he doesn't just enjoy pushing that persona when the behind-the-scenes cameras are on. He enjoys pushing that persona when all in front of any camera, right?
Yeah.
Like, he wants to be the guy that takes selfies with the business office and that says to the business office, like, thanks for the money. You know? Like, that's the character he wants to be all the time, whether all or nothing is there or not. I do think it's performative, but I think it's a performance he's committed to all the time.
Committed to performance. If I needed three words to describe Jose Mourinho, committed to performance would probably do.
It would. But to tell you the truth, like, again, I do feel like you're seeing why he is the coach he is as well,
yeah.
which is cool.
Yeah, I don't even mean that as a dig. Honestly.
No, I know.
Like,
I know.
Think it works on a lot of levels. You know what I mean?
He really, he's got a Phil Jackson thing where, like, he's all wisdom until he has an opportunity to send a message via TV cameras. it's sacred That's... hoops right up until it's telling David Stern quietly not to assign that ref to his series anymore.
Yeah, the press conference stuff is great.
Yeah,
the telling his team they need to be bastards.
Right. Yeah, like, you guys are too nice. That's a great old coaching thing. And just the chats he had with Dyer and Dele, the different way he approaches different players, I think is fascinating.
Yeah, and the other thing, and this is not uncommon among Premier League managers, is like the facility with language. that job requires
yeah
you know.
Well, and just, you know,
mostly manages in English, but just drops into Portuguese, like, you know.
Well, Dyer
and those guys.
I thought it was so funny that he talked to Dyer in Portuguese because Dyer played in Lisbon. That was interesting to me.
Dyer spent a lot of time in Portugal. I think Portuguese is actually his first language, I think. So,
really?
Yeah.
Huh, wouldn't have thought
which
that.
Which is weird, even though he is English.
So that's interesting. There's a lot of interesting stuff here, but thank God for Jose Mourinho. So I guess what I would say is, if you watch the first episode and you're like, there's nothing here, watch the second one.
Yeah. The first episode for me was great because it was just bad things happening to Tottenham, which
right,
I would watch.
Right.
There was a show called Bad Things Happening to Tottenham. I would definitely get a save on my TVR season pass.
I like it.
So anyway, enjoy that. And, you know, knowing what happens the rest of the season to Tottenham, I think you'll have fun.
Yeah.
With this one as well. Okay, I think that covers our list of stuff, right? Do you want to jump into some sports stuff before we get out of here?
Yeah. You want to start with some basketball?
Yeah. So, I guess I'll start with, I made this bet last week. And we talked about the Houston Lakers series. And, the Lakers they might win this series four games to one.
I think they will.
But I feel really good about making this bet because
really?
These to me have been three coin flips.
No,
no?
I just think that's a total misunderstanding of it.
I feel like the logic was sound. You don't think Houston could have easily won those first two games? Obviously, they did win one.
Yeah, I think they were going to get one. And I said before the series, I'd be surprised if they got two, and I kind of still feel that way. To me is just it happened to be game one, so it got everybody a little confused. Here's the thing.
See, I still think this could go seven, this series.
Well,
I'm not saying it will.
It doesn't help. It doesn't help that Daniel House is probably not going to play. But I just – game three is why I don't think it's a coin flip. Because what happened? Describe the end of game three to me.
Here's what I think happened. And maybe, I mean, look, the Lakers were the better team in the fourth quarter, but you know, Rondo hit 9 of 11 shots. Like, how many games is that going to fucking happen?
Playoff Rondo.
Like, the stars played even.
No, they didn't. What happened at the end of that game? Tell me what happened at the end of that game.
Well, look, the Lakers, you know, locked down on D and played better in the fourth quarter. Like, that's what they do. You know what I mean?
That's still not what happened in that game.
And Russ threw up a little bit on himself, and that's, you know.
There are two players you should be mentioning right now, and you're only mentioning one of them. Russell Westbrook did throw up on himself. That's part of what happened. The other thing that happened is named LeBron James. He dominated that game, particularly down the stretch. He refused to let Houston's tiny losers score, and then he dunked on them repeatedly.
Tiny losers.
I mean, that's what happened. And that's why, look, if Houston, instead of ever letting Russell Westbrook touch the ball, if Houston in that situation hits every single three they take down the stretch, then yeah, they can win a game. And they did that in game one. I don't think that happens again. And ultimately, if it's close at all at the end, LeBron will beat them. He will just step on their tiny heads and beat them. And that's what he did. He was like, screw this. He went into the post. He dominated. He drove the lane. He pushed people around. He dominated. And then he blocked all of their shots.
He did block a lot of shots.
I mean, he just and Houston has nothing for that. They have nothing for that. When LeBron,
they always had nothing for that. They always had nothing for him.
And
that's
but why I think they're not going to be able to play seven games or win this series.
Yeah, see, I think their bench, not just their bench, but I think their role players in their bench are so much better, and I still think that, than the Lakers role players in the bench. I think that the reason that the Lakers were in that game is because playoff Rondo showed up for one night.
Two nights.
And
so
look,
far,
if he does that for the rest of the series, then the Lakers probably win handily.
He's like two out of three.
That's happen.
In
and you can't like go, well, you know, if the Rockets just make all their threes like they did in game one, like that'll like that's going to happen more than once in every series. It always happens more than once in every series. And that's what makes Houston so formidable, that like math is in their favor.
Yes.
So
but crunch time is not. And it's so crunch time is not, correct. Not. It's so very not, correct. That they have to either be winning by 20 in the fourth quarter, or they have to specifically hit all of their fourth quarter threes. And while, yes, they'll have another game where overall their three-point percentage is good, I don't trust them to hit shots down the stretch, and I do trust Russell Westbrook to take the ball, dribble in circles, and flip out and throw it out of bounds. Because it's what he does every time. Every time he's in a pressure situation. This is not new.
He's been bad. It's not been that part's not great, for sure.
And he was their best
player.
But
that's also, but that also gives me hope. Like, I think that he can be better.
Do you?
That he has.
Why?
I do.
Why do you think he would be better in a playoff game than a guy who takes the ball away from the team's best player and squanders it?
I didn't say better than LeBron. I didn't say better than LeBron.
I'm not saying better than he has been. I'm not talking about better than LeBron. I'm talking about every time you've ever seen Russell Westbrook in a playoff scenario where there was a better player on his team, he took the ball away from that better player in important moments and squandered his opportunities. Why would now be any different?
I mean, the guy's played in an NBA Finals, is he not?
Yes, like, and in that NBA Finals.
Conference final?
Yeah, and in those games, he consistently took the ball away from his team's better player.
I'm just saying they've been able to make it work with him as the second best player. You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. That was my only point.
And look, if this team also had Kevin Durant, there would be a different story.
Look, I agree. That's the part of this that makes it hard to envision, is the idea of Harden and Westbrook beating a team with LeBron and Davis. It's hard. But it's LeBron and Davis and nobody else.
You're right. And that's why I think they're going to have a really rough time next round.
Yeah, but I do too. And now, all I'm saying is 5-1, I'll take 5-1 on that. LeBron is a nobody else versus a decent team with a lot of good players.
And I'll take 4-1, which by which I mean the score of the series when it ends.
Fair enough. I feel vindicated. You think I'm not vindicated at all?
Well, does go to 7 games, I'll say you were vindicated. I just don't see that happening at all.
Okay. All right. I guess, you know, tonight we'll pretty much find that out either way.
Well, yeah. I mean, to an extent. If it goes 3-1, it's more or less over.
It's pretty much over.
Go ahead.
And the other thing I feel like is that I have, you know, I've turned all the way around on Miami, where I've gone from I don't know to I think they may be better than either the Raptors or the Celtics.
See, I told you.
Do you agree?
I told you Miami was serious. I told you they would beat the Bucks. I just don't know if they could beat the Celtics. I do think they'd beat the Raptors, because the Raptors are sort of similar from a makeup perspective in that, you know, they don't maybe quite have the elite talent you'd want from an NBA Finals team, but they're so tough and together, and the guys who lead the team care about each other and play really well together and do the right things,
like,
and play hard.
They look like they're just here on testicular fortitude.
Yeah, but Miami has more talent. So, right. I do think they would beat Toronto. But, boy.
I do, too.
Boston.
But I think Miami are, like, they're just maniacs, man. Like,
they are. But Boston is a tough matchup for them, man. You know, Jimmy Butler's not going to have the same edge over Tatum and Brown that he's had to this point. Brad Stevens is also as good a coach as you'll face. It's just in terms of the, you know, game to game adjustments, which I think is where Spoelstra kind of stitched a clown suit on Budenholzer. I just think talent wise, they have the edge on Toronto, and Toronto's toughness is not going to jump up and bite them the same way it kind of has the Celtics. And I feel like if the Celtics get through this, they're pretty well battle tested, and that I want to see Celtics.
I just don't know that they've figured it out. You know, like,
I'm not sure they have.
Watching that game yesterday, like, they just don't have. They don't quite know what they want to do at the end of a game to kill a game. You know?
No, they don't. But also, to be fair, in that game yesterday, that double overtime game, Toronto just was amazing. He was just amazing. Now, Gordon Hayward could be back if they play another series.
He could be back, but I think you're going to... I think you would be getting a very diminished Gordon Hayward in this next series. Maybe
yeah,
in the finals,
but
you might have a Gordon Hayward that you would worry about.
Well, but
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Well, no, he's not an all-star, but he's the fourth best player on this team. And so even if you're getting a diminished version, that's another talent edge over a Miami team that, as tough as they are, is pretty thin.
Yeah, Miami is Butler, Adebayo, and shooters, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Don't underrate those shooters because
the shooters are good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and
I like
Hero
a
right?
lot.
I mean, Duncan like Robinson lot. Is just your classic knockdown 3-point shooter, but he does it at a level literally no one's ever done it before. I mean, he broke Klay Thompson's catch and shoot record. Like, the guy is as knockdown a standstill 3-point shooter as you'll ever see. And then Hero is just a badass. He's sort of the opposite style of player. He's not a knockdown shooter, but he's fearless. And he is not at all worried about the moment in his first playoff games at like 19 or 20 years old. It's really impressive.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. Like, you know, they've been impressive, obviously, you know.
Yep.
And
that
I agree with you
culture,
that
man.
The coaching matchup will be more even. I still probably favor Spoelstra, but
it's close.
It's yeah, it's close. You know. So, I don't know. I think I kind of would pick Miami in that series. So,
we'll I mean,
but I think the Clippers are winning this whole thing. So I think it's regardless.
Yeah. So, quickly before we hop into football on our way out the door, what stops the Clippers from winning everything?
Well, I think, you know, the thing that people talk about with the Clippers is the switch, right?
Yep.
Like, they have some games where they don't show up, you know?
I mean, even last night, which was a relatively easy win over the Nuggets, right? It was just sort of a cruise control win over the Nuggets. It's there's a little Milton Berle here, yeah?
Yeah, agreed.
You know, they seem so determined not to expend more effort
than
they
like
need to win.
You and I understood that reference, but I'm not sure that everyone else does.
Yeah, the Milton Berle is pulling out just enough to win.
Right.
And you know, you can look into it if you want to know more about that. But
Google it.
Yeah,
Google.
This is actually a safe Google search, strangely enough. no pictures that I'm aware of. Anyway. That is weird to me, but I do think while they don't have the history of the Warriors teams that did this, I do think they have a talent advantage over over all of the competition that makes this less unsafe than it ought to be, because there ought to be something dangerous from a title pursuing standpoint to playing down to your competition consistently, because that's what they do. And
yeah,
and
some
not
of that
only
I think
that,
is that they lucked into they luck right they lucked you know Luka you know messes up his ankle, Porzingis goes out in that first series, and then they wind up sort of with this Denver team that doesn't play any defense in this second series, you know, like I think some of their ability to the opportunity they've had more opportunities to coast than I think one might expect. Which
yeah,
maybe
but
make
that's
it look worse than it is.
Yeah, but don't do it.
You know
anyway.
If that makes sense.
But still, don't do it, right? I mean, still, you should. And pretty much everyone on this team, besides Kawhi, is looking for their first title. You know, so they have no standing to do this. And yet, I don't see the team that's going to punish them for it in a 7-game series. I just don't.
Do you think it maybe has something to do with the other person who has a title in this in that mix, which is Doc? Yeah,
it's certainly a pattern with his teams, but it's hard for me to say if that's something about him or something about the fact that he has happened over the last 20 years to coach a lot of incredibly talented teams.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a hard coach to evaluate, to be honest.
Well, so it's not unlike Steve Kerr, right? I mean, how do we evaluate Steve Kerr? I don't know.
Yeah,
I think he's really good.
I guess that's true.
I think he's really good, but I don't know what to compare him against.
Right, because he's always had great players.
always
hard
had
to separate from that.
Tremendous players. Yeah.
I also think it's hard, like, managing great players is hard in
it's its
itself.
Own skill. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah, I mean, so, that's why Steve Nash is getting
get that.
Yeah, that's why Steve Nash got the Brooklyn job and not some career assistant, you know?
Is it, do you, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but it's weird that, like, Kevin Durant is not getting more shit for this, right? That all this is sort of falling on Steve Nash.
It's weird that anyone's getting shit for it. How is this different from Mark Jackson getting a job or Steve
or Jason Kidd
getting a job or Jason Kidd getting a job? I mean, the only difference is the context of the times we're living in. And
yeah, was
I
like
think,
Earl Watson in the system before he got hired?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember.
I think one of the things that one of the problems here is like this shows how many people are still ignorant of the actual problems. Is that people want to create a stir over something that's not actually an example of racism in any way. It's just not. Like, the reason friggin' Mike Brown or Lionel Hollins didn't get this job, it has nothing to do with race. Because the only reason Steve Nash got the job is that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving wanted him to get the job. Otherwise, Jacques Vaughn would have had the job. Otherwise, maybe Kenny Atkinson would still be there.
Right. Those guys are making that hire.
Right.
Right? It's a hire entirely to make them happy.
Not to mention, you know? Sean Marks played with Steve Nash, I believe. So, like, this is all about personal connections. And, in fact, it's an odd coincidence that the guy happens to be white, because not a lot of the best point guards in the history of the game are white. It's two, right. Basically. It's him and John Stockton, who is, like, hiding in the woods in Utah somewhere. So
right. Meanwhile, Chauncey Billups, who has no coaching experience at all, is up for a job right now.
He's been up for jobs for years. It's the same thing. Yeah. So it was a very stupid criticism. I don't think Kevin Durant deserves any more crap than LeBron James does for putting Jason Kidd on the staff when Frank Vogel's the coach. Like, there's just this is what players can do now, and star players use the leverage they have. I don't think there's anything to it beyond that. And frankly, I think Steve Nash is going to be a great coach. So I think it's a good hire. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it, other than people who never understood how the racism works in these situations in the first place trying to get on board, which I guess isn't the worst thing.
I mean, if your answer is, man, I wish Mark Jackson had got a turn. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what to tell you. Mark Jackson got a turn. We all remember how it went, right?
Or like, Mike Brown or Ty Lue, for that matter. Like, Ty Lue won a title, yes, but he didn't do anything to distinguish himself as an elite head coach. He didn't do anything that would and he doesn't have so much more experience that you're automatically going to say he's better than Steve Nash with zero experience. So, like, I just don't. Yeah. You know, all due respect to Ty Lue.
That will happen. Yeah.
You're right. He's going to get another job. But, like, this is a very specific job with very specific superstars, and they hired the coach they wanted. It's nothing more complicated than that. All right. Football.
It still feels surreal that there's a football game that counts tonight.
The lack of preseason.
In like a few hours.
Yeah. The season snuck up on us because of this, right? Like, not having preseason made the season sneak up on us. And look, lots of people are probably already watching the game or have watched the game by the time they're going to hear this, so we don't need to talk about the Thursday night matchup, but it's exciting. All of a sudden, Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are leading their teams onto the field on my television screen in a matter of minutes. What a day to be alive.
Yeah. I feel like this is going to be the wackiest season. I mean, there's never been a season where, like, hey, maybe we won't finish is on the table. And that's, like, a non-zero chance we won't finish. I think we will.
Is there?
But... yes, there is. You know, like I said, I would put it at 1% or 2%.
I don't really want to play this game.
But it's non-zero.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to play this game, but I do think it is close enough to zero as to basically be zero. Like, you're right. There is a scenario where things become so very apocalyptic that it becomes literally impossible to play. But that's the only scenario where I see them not playing.
Like, they're the NFL. They're gonna
a whole team getting sick does not stop the season, if you ask me.
Yeah. But that's one of those things. And that's the stuff that is like, you know, what if you know, you're the kid. We all think the Kansas City Chiefs are obviously, you know, one of the main contenders this year. What if, you know, they have a critical game against the Broncos on Monday night and their entire offensive line catches COVID?
Just the offensive line?
Well, and but, you know, yeah, or, you know, just the offensive line or, you know, the offensive line and the cornerbacks. You know what I mean? Like,
well, position room
breakouts could really be a thing. You know what I mean?
But here's how far I think they're willing to take this. If it's six players, the offensive line and the starting left cornerback, next man up.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I think that play the game, but the Chiefs will lose, right? Or, you know, so.
Yeah. Oh, so you're just saying that to make it a wacky season. I absolutely agree. Yeah. It's going to be a wacky season.
Like, I think there's going to be all kinds of wacky results.
For
that's
sure.
The most likely scenarios they're going to play.
Right. But, it's just, I don't think without like literally half the league going down, I don't think they're going to stop playing. So I think we will see a full season. I really hope it's at least as healthy as baseball has been, which is, you know, not totally healthy, but surviving. We'll see about that stuff. I do agree that between the disease and also, man, I really think we are going to see a rash of significant injuries the first 2 weeks. Because every dude that gets knocked out in preseason is pretty much available right now. And when they start taking real hits, like, they haven't had their normal workup physically to this point. They haven't had the practice games where they remember what it feels like to get hit in anger by a real opponent. You know, like, they're not ready. No one's ready for this.
Yeah, you know, new quarterbacks or new coaches with new playbooks in places, or that stuff's going to be weird these first few weeks.
I mean, we're even talking about a Niners team that's returning like 18 starters or something crazy like that. And the fact that, you know, they got a rookie wide receiver who's basically a starter and a rookie defensive tackle who's basically a starter and a new left tackle offensively who's a Hall of Famer but hasn't been there, and almost all of their learning so far has had to be classroom learning, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how well that's going to work out for everybody, and that's a Niners team that, again, is returning the vast majority of its starters from a Super Bowl team. So if you're the Jaguars, good God, man.
Yeah, you know? And I know Tom Brady's been having
illegal workouts
with guys or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I say I know that like I know it for
no,
a fact.
No, we know that.
But I don't know it, but I know it, as Lamar would say.
Yeah, we know.
But I you still don't know how that's going to quite translate onto the field, right?
Yeah, well, and the good news for him is he's got
new dudes.
Almost all of those new dudes and the one old dude are I believe what's called like garage catch radius guys, like just throw it at the garage and they'll find a way to get to it, you know?
Gotcha.
Like their catch radius is the size of a small house. So if he can get it in the neighborhood of Evans and Godwin and Gronkowski and Cameron Brate and OJ Howard, they're gonna be okay.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Evans already may not be ready to go week one.
And, yeah, well, that's the question, right?
Is Gronkowski is almost certainly going to get hurt. And you
yeah.
know what I mean?
How many weeks like, of full talent does that offense have? Because if it's if it's that offense and he's throwing to, you know, whoever, Humphreys and Brate and nobody else, that it's not going to be quite as exciting.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a fascinating year. I feel like you could almost tell me any outcome and I would buy into it. And you know what? That'll be fun. It's great. There, you know, we're going to have all this football while we're trapped inside where no one's going to know what's happened.
Yep.
It's going to be a total clown show. And, you know, in the same way that I'm ready to hate watch Tottenham documentary, like I'll be here for all the entertainment, good or bad.
You bullish on your Falcons?
I am not bullish on my Falcons, no.
Yeah.
Tough
division, man.
I think there's a wide range of possibilities for them there, too. But I just don't know that they did enough defensively.
Yeah.
to step up.
They got, they got some offenses to deal with, man, because Tampa and New Orleans are both dangerous. And I actually think the Carolina offense is going to be better than people expect, because Teddy Bridgewater just likes to throw short passes, and they got guys who can catch and run.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that I kind of like Matt Rhule as a coach. Yeah. It was a really interesting hire.
Yes.
So, it is a tough division. I think the NFC is going to be pretty tough in general. So,
that is the thing. In fact, I have been throwing at sort of all the football guests we have this week. It's just, I look at the NFC, okay? There are 16 teams in the NFC, four divisions of four. And I honestly think there's 10 teams where if they played in the NFC Championship, I'd be like, yeah, okay. 10 of 16.
Yeah, are the six? It's the Giants, Washington football team.
Yep.
The Lions?
Yeah, the Lions and Bears. I'd be shocked if the Bears play in a championship game.
What are your Bears going to do at quarterback? Like, Nick Foles is going to be the quarterback before too long, right?
Dude, I don't want to talk about it. Like, I don't understand. And we haven't had preseason, so I haven't seen anything. But, like, I can't believe Mitchell Trubisky's better than Nick Foles. And I don't think Nick Foles is that good. I just can't believe that. I can't. I don't want to talk about it.
I drafted Nick Foles in a fantasy league where both of them were still on the board. And yeah. I don't regret that.
Well, so, either Nick Foles will play and might be worthwhile, or Mitchell Trubisky will play and neither of them will be worthwhile. So you right, did the right thing. Enough.
It's a 2QB league, just so you know. Which is
right. Yeah, that's the, I assumed that. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, I got Gardner Minshew in a 2QB league, so don't sweat.
Okay. You don't want to know who my starters are in that league. It's not good. All right. A bad situation.
But you're right. I don't want to know. I don't care about your fantasy football team.
No one cares. Nobody cares. It's a bad situation.
So the other two teams, so who'd you leave out? Are Carolina.
I didn't get to Carolina, and then who is it in the West? It's
No, it's nobody in the West.
It's nobody in the West, yeah, right? Any of those teams in the West would be with.
I'd be surprised.
Oh, it's my squad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not gonna be too insulted by that.
Well, both of our teams are in the six that are probably not going to the conference championship. No, look, if the Bears or Falcons squeezed into the playoffs, I wouldn't be shocked. But if they played for a conference championship, I'd be very surprised. If either of those teams get into the playoffs, they'll be one of the worst teams there. So to me, the entire West wouldn't be a shock. Like, yeah, the Cardinals have been down and the Rams have looked down, but they both have a ton of talent.
I like the Cardinals, man.
Yeah, me
really
too.
Do.
So I think certainly the Niners, the Seahawks, the Saints, the Bucks, the Eagles, the Cowboys, the who'd I leave out? But like, there's two teams at the very least in each division that are 100% championship contenders. 100%.
Yep.
And I feel like that is as tough a conference as I've seen in a long time.
And I'm willing to bet you that one of those six teams makes the playoffs.
Yeah, they usually do.
Because that's just the way this
works. There's always a surprise team. You know, we had Peter King. Yeah, we had Peter King on the show yesterday, or maybe it was Tuesday. He thinks the Lions are good.
Yeah, a lot of people do. Matt Patricia.
Yeah. Well, the Mats. The Mats are what turned it off for me. I don't like either of them. But
a lot of people do like Stafford this year, though.
A lot of people have always liked him, and to me, he's the most fugazi 4,000 yards you'll ever find. He's a poor man's Eli Manning who had Calvin Johnson on his team. That's how I see Matt Stafford. But that offense has a lot of talent, and when he was healthy last year, they were really, really good. So, you
know, he's going to throw 50 times every game.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
They'll put up stats, and Galladay is a stud, and Kerryon Johnson's pretty interesting. So, like, they could score points. I just don't believe in Matt Patricia at all. So I don't think they'll play good enough defense to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I tend to agree, which is the same story for the Falcons, I think.
But, again, you're right. There's always one or two teams that were like, no way, before the season, and then they're good. So that's part of the wild ride of the NFL, man. I'm excited to do it again.
Yeah, me too. And if anything, I would expect more of those teams this year, not less, for the reasons that we talked about in the beginning. So it'll be fun to see where it all ends up. I'm ready to go along for the ride, and I've kind of surrendered to the unpredictability of the whole thing.
Yeah, I for what it's worth, if you made me pick today, I'm picking a rematch.
A Super Bowl rematch.
I know it's incredibly unlikely, but I honestly believe those are the two best teams in football and the best teams in their respective conferences. I mean, I just think that's true. So if you're going to make me pick, understanding that, you know, there aren't necessarily high odds of it happening, that's how I would go.
Yeah. I believe in the Super Bowl loser's curse. I feel like that's real. I've experienced it myself.
Yeah, so what's interesting about that is, in a way, it's undoubtedly real, right? But it usually happens because of not because of a mysterious curse, but because of actual real-world attrition. And in a way, the Niners had a little bit of that, trading DeForest Buckner, letting Emmanuel Sanders go, but that's really it. They didn't lose coaches. They didn't lose any, you know, other significant players. And they did make some key additions in a couple of spots. And they upgraded, for instance, left tackle. I hear you. But I think the Niners may have avoided that somewhat because of the bizarre nature of the last year. And, you know, they look like, again, without seeing them because we have no preseason, they look like sort of the same team to me.
Yeah, well, that's someone who has a lot of Raheem Mostert stock in fantasy this year. I hope that's right.
Can I give you a piece of advice?
Yeah.
In those leagues where you have Raheem Mostert, go ahead and just...
Don't take Tevin Coleman because it's already done.
No. Josh's
already done.
Not at all. Go ahead and just let go of, like, Nick Foles or whoever's sitting on the back end of your roster and just slide Jerick McKinnon in there for a couple weeks to make sure.
Okay. Yeah, I like that idea.
I think
he's actually available a lot of places.
He's available almost everywhere except the leagues that I'm in. And he, to me, is a guy who there's like a 40% chance that he's going to have the highest usage on the whole team.
I will. I'll take that tip. And I'm not. I was not unaware of that possibility because obviously they paid big money for him a couple years ago. So
yeah, and it's not just the money.
I'm gonna roll with Chiefs in Dallas, by the way.
Okay, that's not bad. I don't know that I trust Mike McCarthy more in Dallas than I did in Green Bay, but I they got a lot of talent too.
A lot of talent. That's a low confidence pick.
You know what else? I think everything's a low confidence pick, right? But one thing we've also heard from a lot of football people is like, we'll see if it happens, but Dallas expects Aldon Smith to be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Which could be a thing. And that's part of why I like them. I feel like they added some stuff, some interesting toys on defense, and the offense everybody expects to be great. So.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing about Aldon Smith. He's 30 with very few football miles on him. So like physically, if he got himself together, he should be about as good as ever. And if he like can stay mentally healthy and out of trouble, there's no reason why at 30 with no miles on him, he wouldn't be just, you know, maybe if not every bit as good, very close to as good as he was when he was healthy with the Niners, which was dominant. So,
right.
You know, while acknowledging the possibilities that this is a total flop, I think we also have to acknowledge the possibility that he's better than anyone is thinking because he has that ability in him.
Yeah, I've seen him before. It's going to be a fun season. Going to be a fun season. By the way, told you to watch the Braves last week.
Woo!
Did you see what they did last night?
So here's the thing that impresses me, okay? If there is a game on the slate of the day where a team wins 19-0 and you, the Atlanta Braves, can give up 9 runs and still win by more, you have done something incredible.
Yeah, you have done something incredible. That is indeed. You have 22 runs in the fifth inning. Then you've had a day.
I mean, there must have been a game where someone scored 29 runs before, I guess. But
yeah, apparently the Braves did it in 1883 as the Boston Bean Eaters.
But oh my God,
30.
29 runs is an unbelievable amount of runs.
Yeah, it's insane.
Save some for the rest of the series, as they say.
I think they may have a few left.
No, I mean, this team is super exciting. And, like, look, we talked about the White Sox and Braves last week, and both of those teams are hot, and they both hit the hell out of the ball. Lucky
sure
us.
Do. Sure do. Your team can pitch, though, so it's, I'll take
well,
it
let's,
at the end of the day.
My team is pitching right now. I don't know if they can pitch. So we'll see.
All right, fair enough.
We'll see.
Fair enough. All right, let's get out of here on that.
All right, what's homework?
Oh, you're right. We didn't even do homework. My God. Okay. There's some stuff happening this week. There's a new Laverne Morris series. Did I say that right? Laverne Morris? Laverne Morris?
What's... Lamorne.
The guy from New Girl.
Lamorne Morris.
Woke, which is coming to Hulu.
Are you hearing me? I can't tell if I broke up in your ears.
Lamorne. I am hearing you, yes. Yeah. Also, I screwed up on I'm Thinking of Anything, so we'll get to that next week.
Yep.
New HBO show from another guy whose name I can't pronounce, who the director of Call Me By Your Name. It's Luca
Guadagnino.
Italian name. but that's the trailers for that look really interesting, so I'm excited about that. And then there's a Jude Law limited series.
Yeah,
it's like
a two
episode series, right?
Yeah, two episode series. Yeah, it's like
I guess
HBO
we can call that a
mini series. Some British yeah. thing coming together for
the third day is the name of that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It seems
that's your
sort of
for this week.
that movie or show or whatever it is sort of feels appropriate for the skies outside my house based on what I've seen.
Great,
also,
so it's going to be real uplifting then.
Yeah. So, side note, I guess Luca, what's his face, is also directing a Scarface remake.
I think I had heard something about that. Yeah. That'd be interesting because previously all his stuff has been like sort of moody coming of age drama.
Yeah,
stuff, right?
But he was quoted as saying he wants a big R rating for his Scarface.
Oh, I think he does.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's the reason to do it. So let's see what you got. Anyway, that's
Tony Montana like fruit at all? There's going to be any fruit?
Okay, that's all right. Okay, I think that's enough. We'll also be watching more NBA playoffs and the first week of NFL. I'm so excited. Talk to you next week. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.